my Paul Bearer impression. It wasn't that good, but you got it.
I don't get that at all.
Well, you better. You got it. Apparently, from what I understand, you got a week to shape up. But anyways, we've got our buddy Dustin. Dustin is Dustin, man. With the punches, I guess I could say formerly of With the Punches, because With the Punches kind of isn't around anymore. But great band.
He tends to differ.
Never mind. And current touring guitar player in Keep Flying, the very excellent Keep Flying, who we love very much. But cool, that was a good chin scratch. So I'm gonna have some questions about that. But Dustin, man, thanks for being on with us. What's going on, bud?
Oh, thank you guys, man. I'm hyped to be here.
Excellent. So, my memory of With the Punches, and I'm sure you probably remember it too. I remember you guys playing the Woodshop on Long Island. Yeah. And I don't know how we put as many people as we did in there, but I remember that place being so sweaty and hot when you guys played. It was like unbelievable. I'd never, like, that room had never been so disgusting before. Until I think the only thing that eclipsed it was somehow we got Foxing to play there, and it was equally as disgusting. But nice. But yeah, you guys killed it, man. And you know, I always really thought With the Punches was just such an underrated band. I just thought you guys, you know, kind of flew under the radar at a time when pop punk was kind of in transition. You know, it was like going from that like neon age where, like, you know, you had like your Forever the Sickest Kids and your, you know, We the Kings and all those kind of bands, and it was just sort of starting to transition into like your Transits and your Wonder Years and all that kind of stuff, even though you guys were sort of running concurrent with them. But, you know, and then unfortunately, unceremoniously, the band came to an end. But kind of cool though. Like I said, I saw a little head tilt when I said formerly of With the Punches, so I think we can talk about that a little bit. But let's start by talking about what you're doing now, and then we'll get back into With the Punches. But so you're playing with Keep Flying. Would love to hear the story about how you got linked up with Keep Flying. I have a feeling that it somehow runs through the river John James, but have at it, man. So how'd you get linked up, and you know, how'd you end up playing with them?
I knew Henry from Survey Says, his previous band, and which I was a huge fan of, and especially like their last record. And so when they put out Observations of the Human Condition, I was like, it was like right around, you know, like not super long after With the Punches stopped touring. And I think I'm pretty sure like I was talking to him because I was like printing shirts to him. And he was like, yeah, man. You know, and I was like, dude, I was like, I listen to the record all the time. Like, I love it. I knew Survey Says was like coming to a close. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I'm actually, you know, I'm pretty bummed about it. And I was like, well, if you ever want to do another band, like, please just call me. Like, I would really love to play in a band with you. That would be dope. Mm-hmm. And so a couple months go by and I get a call from Henry and he's like, yo, man, he's like, start a new band. And I was like, yes, that rocks. And he goes, with John Ryan. And I went, okay. So like John is one of my favorite people in the world. He's one, one of my closest friends. Mm-hmm. I have a tattoo of him on my arm. that's real. So I was like, he said with John Ryan. And in my head, I went, oh, this is the call.
Yep.
He's calling to tell me. Oh, okay. Oh, all right. I see where this is going. So, all right. Well, so, who's going to play guitar, Henry, in this new band? And he goes, oh, it's this dude, Charlie Bruno. I don't think you know him. And I went, oh, no.
The deflation.
Yeah, it was just very sad. I was like, do you remember a couple months ago we were talking? And I was like, hey, I'm a big fan. I'd really love to play a band with you. And he's like, yeah, I thought you were joking. God.
Yep.
I was real hyped, and then they sent me some songs before they came out, and I was like, this is great, this is incredible. And at the time, my wife and I were very involved with a camp for kids with type 1 diabetes in central Pennsylvania. And she worked for the camp year round, and I just kind of helped out here and there. And so we had had a band the previous year play My Friends and Thieves from Texas. And I was like, yo, I would love to have you guys. So the first official Keep Flying show was at our diabetes camp. So I've like always just, you know, since I was on from day one. But yeah, so, you know, go see them at shows. With the Punches did like a weekender with them in 2019.
Okay. Awesome.
And then this summer when Charlie decided he wasn't going to tour with the band anymore, John called me up and was like, hey man, so Charlie's going to quit the band. And I was like, but again, I've been on this phone call before.
Yep. Yeah. We got this guy named like Archibald. He's going to play.
Yeah. Mike Tomasulo is going to play guitar. But he was like, would you be interested? And I was like, yo, I want to be in Keep Flying. I've wanted to be in Keep Flying. He's like, cool. He's like, well, we'll see how the tour goes and, you know, see what happens and we'll go from there. And so that was first tour we did was like end of August to early September. Mm-hmm. And I've been on every tour since. So
excellent.
Going on 6 months now.
Love to hear it. Now, as far as kind of like your standing in Keep Flying, you know, I know, you know, Henry's kind of a maniac when it comes to writing music and all that stuff. And I feel like he's one of those guys that is constantly writing. So have you been involved in any of that songwriting process?
A little bit. He'll send me like clips of things, mostly because I just badger him all the time. Like, yo, man, love to write songs.
Yeah.
Like, there you go. And so I'm like, yo, just send, literally, I'm like sitting at home, I'm doing nothing. Please just send me something to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll demo something out and he'll be like, that was not really what I had in mind, but this thing is cool. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So, so what will end up getting used? I don't know. I'm just happy to be here. You know what I mean?
Well, that's awesome. No, I mean, and it's like I said, it's great to know that you're, you know, you're kind of getting involved in that, which is essentially, you know, what you would have wanted to have done from the get-go. But, you know, it's a great thing. You know, Keep Flying is just one of those bands that we've talked about ad nauseum on the podcast, but I mean, they're just the quintessential band that like does it the right way. You know, I mean, a lot of bands nowadays are, you know, before they're even starting to think about getting in a van, you know, they're putting out singles and they're, you know, wondering how many, you know, streams they're going to get and all this kind of stuff. But Keep Flying is, you know, the band that did it the way that bands did it back when we were kids, you know, like you wanted to go out there and get noticed. Well, jump in the van, go play shows, you know, play 50 cap shows, play 100 cap shows, play 300, 500, like get out there and play. And, you know, through the pandemic and through all of the negativity, Keep Flying has just been that one band that's just been steadily doing it. And I think that's a great thing. And, you know, I think your presence in the band is really going to be a great thing for them because, you know, looking back to With the Punches and looking back to, you know, again, as I had called out in the beginning, kind of the sound that you guys had cultivated, I mean, like it was kind of wild for the time, right? So I mean, now you've got another songwriter in the mix, which is great. You know, to kind of, I guess, keep Henry on his toes, if that's even possible. I don't know. Like he's just, you know, it's unreal. Like when I think of having just Henry and John, them two, and I, you know, you look at like their back catalog of everything they've been involved in, all of the music that they've been involved in. It's just like, you know, it shouldn't surprise me how prolific they are as songwriters, but it still does.
Oh yeah. And like, and it's being this, like being this much closer now and getting to know everybody better. Like I'm a fan of Henry's music, fan of the, like Henry and, you know, the songs that Keep Flying has written thus far.
Yeah.
But I never got to see, like, I didn't know that Henry just has perfect pitch. So like, we're, you know, like somebody's running a vacuum cleaner. He's like, oh, it's a G sharp. It's a little bit sharp, but two, but it's close. It's like pretty close.
You know,
like,
maniac. I love it.
Yeah. Or like watching some band play and he's like, we get on stage, like, you know, some opener play and
we get on and he like thanks them and then like plays one of their songs as he's thanking them, like kind of half plays it. And you're like, when did you?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Sure. But everybody in the band's like that. Like yeah. Chuck, who plays bass, is like mm-hmm. unbelievable singer and,
yep.
and songwriter as well. You know, Peter, our drummer, is like an actual crazy person. Like,
yeah, it's true.
Like death, we'll be in the van and like death metal, the hardest SoundCloud rap you've ever heard in your life, Devo for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, yo, this, he's like, I know, I, you know, like not knowing Peter very well.
Yeah, of course.
I was just like, oh, that's the kid in the Zabalba beanie for a long time. But he's yeah. so, like, he's so diverse and like just has such a wealth of knowledge of music. And Ricky, like Ricky, I didn't know Ricky at all. He's like the guy I knew the least.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been playing in ska bands for, you know, the last 600 years. So it's like, he has done this as much as anyone. And it's awesome.
So is he a mailman? Because the last few times I saw Keep Flying, he rocks like authentic mailman shorts. And yeah. I just was curious.
He does always wear the mailman shorts. I will tell you, I asked him because I was like, yo, Rick, like, where did you get mailman shorts? And he was like, don't worry about it. And I was like, no, but Rick, like, were you a mailman at any point? And he was like, I don't like to talk about it. And I was like, I'm not asking you like about the intricacies. I just want to know, did you work for the U.S. Postal Service? He's like, well, we'll talk about it another time.
There's some sort of like secret society of mailmen that like you can't talk about it. It's like Fight Club, except way worse.
The man is unhinged.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, there's some levity to all that. It's just like as crazy of a band as Keep Flying is, and at least all their components when put together kind of just come together and just are this like glorious, wonderful thing. So it's just like, it's really wild. I guess I got to tell this story because it's a sad story. But it involves me not even seeing you guys play one note of songs. Friday, I'm just going to tell the story. Friday, a guy, you know, I had a few drinks, and a few drinks turned into a few more drinks. And then all of a sudden, by the time I got to the venue, I promptly listened to like the first four chords of an Out of Time song and told my wife that I had to go home because I was going to get sick. And I promptly did. I got sick like three times on the way home. But I gave John this huge hug and told him how excited I was to see them play. And truthfully, I was so excited to see Keep Flying play because I'd only see Keep Flying once. I'd never seen them with you, Dustin, playing. So I was just like, holy shit, this is going to be great. And I didn't even make it. So for that, I do truly apologize. It's not one of my best moments, but it was a moment nonetheless. But, you know, that's why you got to learn to hold your booze better. So.
It's funny because Justin from Out of Time before the gig started, he's like, oh yeah, like my buddy Tommy's coming, like has a podcast, and we're talking about the podcast. And I was like, oh, what podcast is it? Oh, Bar Down Breakdown. And I was like, oh, that's that fucking podcast all the time.
Yep.
I was like, that's dope. I was like, I've met that dude before.
Yeah.
I was like, we're not like friends, but like we've definitely met.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm hyped to say hi. Like I haven't seen him since the podcast started. Love mm-hmm. to, you know, tell him how much I enjoy it.
Yep.
And then after I was like, yo, Justin, you seen Tom around? He's like, I think he had a couple too many. I think he had to go home.
That's exactly. That's precisely what happened.
I literally ask Tom like once a year to do something for the podcast, just once a year. And I was like, dude, like, you know, we're good friends with Out of Time. We're good friends with Keep Flying. Like, why don't you film a few videos to put up on our Instagram story? And I like kept checking throughout the night, like as all the bands are playing. I was like, all right, maybe he'll do it in the morning. Like radio silence. So I had to text Justin from Out of Time. I'm like, dude, is Tom alive? Like, he is not responding, and now it all makes sense.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't something I'm very proud of. I did. Apparently, I didn't even remember it, but my wife said we went to Taco Bell, and I promptly got sick in the Taco Bell line, and like opened the passenger door. Like stumbled out into like this grassy patch, started like throwing up, and then like after like 30 seconds of throwing up, apparently just like fell over, just like shoulder over head fell over and just did like essentially a somersault into like more grassy knoll. It wasn't good. It really wasn't good. But you know, I think like I get that inebriated maybe two or three times a year. And this was just the time that I decided to do it. So if you're out there listening, just know that Tommy did a bad. Tommy did a real bad one. And but luckily, keep flying tours like 356 days out of the year. So at least I'll get another opportunity to see you guys at some point. And at that time, I'll be drinking water and Gatorade only.
No. Absolutely. And we love Florida, so they'll definitely be in Florida.
For sure.
So, yeah, I did want to comment on that because Only Keep Flying does, like, statewide tours. Like, they're the only band that I've ever seen do that. Like, oh, we're going to do a Texas tour. Who does a freaking Texas tour? Like, who does a strictly Florida tour? Like, that's unheard of. And
we you have guys Pennsylvania coming up in February.
Yeah, it is. There you go. So you guys played, and I've heard about this place, the Bat Ranch or the Bat, like what it's like lore. Like I've heard about it, but I need to hear from you. Like, what is this place about?
Okay, so the story that I heard is that this guy just like is into horror stuff. Has all this land in Florida, in Apopka, Florida. And he started out just throwing like Halloween parties because he just had like this big, like an outbuilding, you know what I mean? Like, big, like pole barn. So, and then they just got bigger and bigger. And then there were like 2,000 people showing up for these Halloween parties this dude was throwing. He's like, so I had to chill on that because that's like too much. And I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. His neighbor had heard a ruckus and was like, hey man, I have a band. Could we like rehearse over here? And so they brought over equipment and then that's kind of how they started the venue. Love that. Now, so that's the backstory that I heard. Here's my experience. So one, with the Punches, I don't want to say we only ever had bad tours in Florida, but bad things happened in Florida every time. First tour, we lost two vehicles in Florida. Two. One we had, bought another one. That one died as we crossed the Georgia state line.
Ugh.
Great. So when I started touring Keep Flying, John was like, we're going to go to Florida. I know you hate Florida. We're going to go to Florida. We love Florida. I love Florida. John basically is Florida man.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Right now, all day, he's just like, oh, I can't wait to get to Boca. It's my guy, you know what I mean? Yeah. What are you going to do?
Nope.
But yeah, so I have only had terrible experiences in Florida. So, but we get to Florida. We've had a couple days beforehand to just like hang out, see friends, having a great time. go over and like bother everybody at Smart Punk for like a couple days.
Sure.
Way too much time. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We pull up to this place and it's like a long dirt road, quarter mile, you know what I mean? From the road to like the ranch. And it just looks, there's like a bombed out, like RV, like an actual bombed out RV, like, ever seen a war movie? That. Like, and John is just getting excited. Oh my God. Look at it. It's glorious. I'm in the back, like, I don't have any weapons on me. This is not good.
What are we gonna do?
You come say hi.
Oh, look at that.
All right. See you later. There you go. Be safe.
We love appearances from JJR.
Peace be the journey, man.
Peace be the journey. So he's just getting more and more hyped up. I'm like terrified. We get out. There's a kid running around, like a six-year-old kid running around. And he's got water balloons. He's not throwing them at us, but he's throwing them near us. And I'm like, and it's cold. Like, I wasn't expecting cold in Florida. I brought one pair of pants.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my hoodie somewhere along this tour. Yeah. It's been cold down here.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know. So he's throwing water balloons near us, and we're all just kind of like, we're trying to be like, okay, this is clearly like a feral child that he's cool. He's a nice kid, but also like, we want to make it clear, like, please do not hit us with water balloons. It will make us very uncomfortable in a place that looks insane. Load in, people are nice. You know what I mean? Like DIY venue, Florida. You know what I mean? Like you can extrapolate that what you will.
Absolutely.
Get everything set up, looking good, you know, before the show starts, and a guy comes out with what I can only describe as a flamethrower, but that might not necessarily be the title. It has a propane tank, like a for a grill attached, and it shoots fire.
I would call that a flamethrower.
Looked like a flamethrower to me. You know what I mean? I don't know the intricacies. You know what I mean? Like, if you're like a flamethrower enthusiast and I'm calling it the wrong thing, I apologize. But lights, there's a bunch of wood. Lights, and like, looks like it was going to be a bonfire. Okay, cool. Lights the bonfire. But then there's just a tree next to it, and he also lights that on fire. And we're like, and I'm sitting next to John, and he's like, oh, that's nice. I'm like, okay. Everybody, that being said, everybody was really nice. The bands were awesome. Like, all the bands that played were rad. And because we flew into the gig, we don't have any amps with us. We just have our guitars. Mm-hmm. And Pete has, like, you know, kick pedal, cymbals, and a snare drum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let us use all their stuff.
That's awesome.
People showed up. It was great. We had so much fun. The band that we used their equipment was Suck Brick Kid.
Oh, great band.
Oh, hell yeah.
Great band. Great dudes. Mm-hmm. We played with them before. I love that band. So I'm always real excited when I get to see them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we just had a great time, but terrified. Actually, like fearful for my life, grown man. Felt good.
And are they legit bats? Like that has to be addressed.
No. Bugs everywhere. Getting mauled by mosquitoes. We're putting on pants and hoodies. Mm-hmm. Got our hoods up. Getting mauled.
Yep. No bats.
Not a bat in sight.
Not a bat in sight. But there are bats in Florida. I've seen them actually. Like twilight driving around, like even where I live in like the Winter Park, Maitland area, there's bats. It's crazy. But, and it's funny because Apopka is not too far from where I am. I mean, Apopka is just like 20 minutes from where I am. But, you know, the further you get out of like Orlando proper, the weirder things get. Things can get a little weird, but weird is not the worst thing. You know, I mean,
right.
I've done some weird things. I remember I was in this punk band when I was probably 10 years ago, and we did a little trip to Florida and back, and we played somewhere in Jacksonville in this like warehouse. And this dude was wearing a Tigger outfit. And one song in, he just like shed his Tigger outfit, and he was just wearing like tighty whities for the rest of the show, and that's about it. But I get it. I mean, it was like January in Florida, and it was like 85 degrees because Florida doesn't know what the hell it wants to do. But that was fun. That was a fun time. But you know, I mean, Florida man is a real thing. We all know that. It's a very real thing. But I love that, though. I mean, like, you know, as weird as that is, DIY venues just, I mean, you know, Long Island being one of those places where it's almost impossible for them to exist. You know, we've had them come and we've had them go. So it's good to know that, you know, flamethrowers and all, at least there's still a place for people to go play, which is awesome. So let's kind of turn the clock back real quick, because want to talk a little bit about With the Punches. And I specifically want to talk about Seams and Stitches, because I mean, you know, Doghouse Records, man, like that's a pretty serious thing. You know, I mean, like Doghouse was one of those labels that even, I mean, at that time in what, 2011, 2012, I mean, they were, you know, they had some serious music on it. I mean, you know, you date back to, you know, like way before that, but I mean, you know, Get Up Kids and Limbeck and, you know, Say Anything and like all these like, you know, unbelievable artists. And then here you guys are getting an opportunity to put a record out on Doghouse. And I just kind of would love to hear a little bit of insight about, you know, how that process came to be, how you ended up signing with Doghouse, how the recording process for Seams and Stitches went, and what it was like getting to work with a label like Doghouse, because that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really was. And it was largely mostly due to our manager at the time, a guy named Kyle Roger, who is just one of our close friends. And he worked at you out of here? All right, brother. Can I love it. Yeah, no, come on. John from Northbound is making a cameo appearance.
Bye, brother. Bye, man. Love you. Good hanging. Love you.
I'll talk to you soon.
Peace.
Hey. Love it.
What's funny is him and John are leaving together. John was here 10 minutes ago.
Sure was. Yep.
It's fine. It's fine. So Kyle really believed in the band. And he was just a dude we had known. He played in a band called Searching for Skylines. And so, you know, he worked at Glamour Kills, which is like, at that time, if you're from the Hudson Valley, when you're home from tour, you work at Glamour Kills. Like, Mark just hired everybody. Like, oh, you don't, like, you're home from tour for 3 weeks and you need a job that's going to, like, pay you reasonably and under the table if you'd like.
Yep.
Cool. Come in, pack shirt orders for me. Yeah. Okay. What else can I do? Here's this Nerf sniper rifle. If you just want to shoot Kyle, there's like an angle from the warehouse where you can like really, you can hit him right in the face. And he would just, you know, like that was, they took such good care of all of us, everybody in the scene at that time. And yeah, so Kyle was like just a believer in the band. And so we had put out the two EPs and we're like, okay, we're ready to like make a full length. Mm-hmm. We're going to take on the challenge. And he was really like, before we had, I don't even think we had any demos for any of the songs yet. He got us a meeting with them and they were interested. And Jesse and I heard Doghouse Records and we were like, they put out the Get Up Kids, of course. Like,
yeah.
I was like, yeah, but like, you know, I was like, do you think it fits with the punches? Like, they put out the Get Up Kids.
Yep.
Like, let's, I mean, yeah, unless, you know, unless, I don't think Epitaph's coming calling for us. So, yes, like, this is great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we started that talk and then we went on a long summer tour and we were having like some internal issues with our bass player at the time and it just wasn't working out. We were kind of done. We were like, Jesse and I started the band together. Mm-hmm. Shane, our drummer, joined. He brought Joe, our guitar player, and the bass player. Name I'm not going to mention just out of respect for him because I'm not going to trash him, but I'm also not going to speak glowingly about the guy.
Sure.
So we got to California and Shane and the bass player hated each other. And he was just wild out of pocket and I quit my band, which mm-hmm. if you know anything about With the Punches, you know, like I'm the guy that's like, if you talk to somebody on social media, you're talking to me. If you like send mm-hmm. an email, I'm the guy that gets back to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you hate somebody in the band, it's probably me. but it was not working out. Jesse called me. We got home from the tour, a couple of days went by, he called me and said, hey man, I talked to Shane and Vinny, who was playing guitar, who's our guitar player now, and took over when Joe left the band in 2010. He's like, I talked to everybody and everybody still wants to do the band. And I was like, oh, thank God. And he goes, but nobody's willing to do it with the bass player.
Mm.
Awesome. Great. I knew that we had purchased a van and it was in his name. I knew that would be an issue, but I didn't care. I just wanted to play music and make music.
Sure. Of course.
So Jesse is like, I'm going to call him and tell him he's not in the band anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be on the call as well? Sure. Okay, cool. Just lay in the back. You jump in if you need to jump in. Okay, cool. So that conversation happens. It is a emotional thing.
Mm-hmm. And it ends with him saying, "Do you think Doghouse Records still going to sign you without me?"
Ugh.
Jesse had already spoken to Doghouse Records, and they were like, "Yeah, that dude's a pain in our ass. Please."
There we go. Love it.
Jesse Vidala, ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. prepares. So that happens, and we just start getting together every week because we live kind of separately. Jesse lived in Beacon at the time. I lived mm-hmm. in Newburgh, New York. Shane lives in Central New Jersey. Vinny is in Staten Island.
Yeah.
So we get together at this rehearsal space in Union, New Jersey every week, and we just start throwing out songs. Vinny is a riff machine. He just mm-hmm. always has cool riffs coming out.
Awesome.
And it's great. Like it feels good. It feels like when we started the band, and everything's feeling really great. We do record two singles, which is Harvard on the Hudson and I Told You Already,
mm-hmm.
To be released before. We record those with our friend Seamus, who works at the machine shop at the time.
Okay.
Everything's going great. Our friend Mike is a great bass player and played in a band called Jerk City that I love. I truly love that band. They're from New Brunswick, New Jersey. And just we played a couple shows with them in 2008, 2009. And I was always a fan of the guy. He was a guitar player, but he was playing bass and we needed a bass player. So Mike comes in and plays bass on the songs, kills it. We start having him come to rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Still not in the band. After a while, we're getting ready to go into to make the record, and I called him and was like, "Hey man, I heard that you can't be in the band, that you just got too much other stuff going on, and I understand." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "No, I really want to be in the band." I knew that, but I just want to make his life suck for a minute. So I'm like, no, it's fine. Don't feel bad about it. Like, it's not a big deal. We don't take anything. You know, we still love you. If you want mm-hmm. to come, play on some shows, that'd be fine. He's like, "No, I want to be in the band." I'm like, "Well, I guess." If you hate someone with the punches, it's me. but yeah, so we go in. Our friends are a band called Young English, and they made a record at Barbershop Studios with Kevin Kumitz. So we love the way that record sounded. We're listening to it on repeat all the time. So we called Kevin and we're like, "Hey, we don't know you personally, but you made this record we love, and you're like, everything with the punches is kind of we're willing to step outside our immediate circle of friends and family mm-hmm. a little bit, but not very far. We're old. We don't really trust people with our music." So that being the case, we're like, "Well, he's not a person that we know, or we recorded either the first two records with, who we know very well,
mm-hmm.
but he worked with Sean Gorse. And if you worked with Sean Gorse and survived, you will probably be fine. If you didn't kill, if you don't kill Gorse, if you guys know Gorse from Young English,
I'm familiar with Young English, but I'm not familiar with him specifically. But
Gorse is a bass player, and at the time he was just like a walking train wreck. He's a lovely person, and I recently got to spend some time with him, and one of the best dudes. But at the time, a true nightmare of a human being. So. We go into Barbershop, and this is the first time we've been in a studio that isn't like our friends, like Mike Kalajan's studio at the time was like a barn.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, but it's a barn like near his house. Okay. We recorded Keep It Going with our friend Seamus, who just had like this weird building. It kind of looked more like a tiny apartment than it did a recording studio.
Okay.
We walk into Barbershop, and it's like a former church. There's big stained glass. They have floating floors, so like the floors are isolated, so it doesn't transfer any vibration.
Okay.
For recording, I didn't even know that was a thing that existed. Cool.
Yeah.
and so we spend a couple weeks driving to and from Lake Hopatcong, New Jersey, and just like really crafting this record. Most days, everybody's in the studio and. We record the drum tracks record the scratched drum tracks with everyone in the room playing live.
Okay. And that just felt great as a band that, like, I know that things are done in Pro Tools and everything has to be on the click and, yep, and on the grid and, and perfect. I hate the way it sounds. I grew up on, you know, Bad Religion and Lifetime. These bands that, like, no, you can hear the the fingerprints, you know?
Yep, play it live. Absolutely.
Exactly. I love that. Mm-hmm. So that was such a huge thing for us. And Jesse and I would spend the drives to New Jersey writing lyrics together and just, like, listening to the demos from the day before. And, like, oh, okay, like, what are we trying to talk about in the song? What is this? And, you know, I think both of us really, maybe more than the first two records, got to work out a lot of our own demons.
Awesome.
And stuff that we had never really addressed in our lives. And, you know, it's 2012, so, like, who's going to therapy in 2012?
Yeah, right?
Not me. again, if there's somebody with the punches you hate. But yeah, and so it was this, like, really wonderful experience getting to make music with four people that I adore and I think are some of the best musicians I know. Vinny is absolutely, hands down, the best guitar player I've ever met. Mike's a great guitar player, but as a bass player, he did things on that record that are subtle enough that it's not like the Mike show, mm-hmm. but when you isolate it, you're like, wow. Okay. Or that's crazy. That's a crazy thing he just played there. Shane is a machine of a drummer. And I personally don't think I'll put Jesse Vidala as a front man up against anyone in history.
Yeah.
He's my best friend. I'm a little biased, but I think when he digs in and yells,
yeah.
Don't get better.
Yeah, dude. No, he definitely puts on a hell of a show. And I think that's an important thing in this kind of music, right? Because you know, you can write great music, you can. But I mean, if you don't, you know, not only give it your all, but, like, if you're not entertaining, you know, when you go to see some, you know, a band, it's just, you know, like, you can listen to a record all you want. But I think one of the things that was great about seeing you guys was always entertaining. You know, it was always, you know, a great kind of rush of energy. And I think that's important, you know, in this kind of music, because being captivating is important, like, just as it is, you know, writing great music. And even, you know, going back, you know, like I said, talking about the Lifetimes and the Bad Religions and the Kid Dynamites of the world. I mean, like, you know, they were anything but perfect. Even, I mean, I saw Lifetime at Fest a couple of years ago, and watching them at Fest, they still weren't perfect. You know, yeah. Dan Yemen just, like, playing the wrong chords and all this nonsense, but it's just like, dude, that's Lifetime. And, like, you're there to, you know, to see Ari jump around like a maniac, you know, and it's just like, that's what it is. So, you know, that's punk rock at its core. So, before we dive into a little bit of hockey talk and then kind of get back to, kind of the future for With the Punches, which I'm very, very excited to talk about, I do just want to real quick talk about our sponsor, and our sponsor is DraftKings. And DraftKings, right now, unfortunately, we're not doing too much with hockey, unfortunately, which is a sad thing. But, you know, as we all are, the NFL playoffs are kind of in full swing right now. And still can't believe that the Niners took down the Cowboys, but I guess that had to happen. Something weird had to happen. But as we're into the divisional round of the playoffs, DraftKings is, of course, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. And we're still celebrating some huge odds. We're going to go Super Bowl 56. So we're still rocking 56-1 odds on any team. So if you bet just $5, you get $280 in free bets if your team wins, which is awesome. You'll love that. And if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the action in the divisional round. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest. And DraftKings, of course, they're always giving all of their new customers a ton of awesome things and a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. So make that first deposit, get all of those cool prizes. Try to win $1 million. I mean, dude, that's awesome. So download DraftKings Sportsbook app right now, and you can use that promo code THPN, the Hockey Podcast Network. You have 56-1 odds on any NFL team, $5, win 280 in free bets. And that's awesome. So again, it's promo code THPN for 56-1 odds. DraftKings Sportsbook, and they're an official sports betting partner of the NFL, and you must be 21 years or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. So see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or call Vinny Caruana, because he knows about having gambling problems as well. And that's the third episode that I've said that. And I'll continue to say
at least
it.
I know the reference this time. So, Dustin, we talked about how we're going to shift over to hockey, and it's kind of funny how this weekend we actually just started like a Isles Meetup Hudson Valley group. That's like my other side project that I have going on. And, you know, the Newburgh-Poughkeepsie area is one of those kind of divided loyalty regions where pretty much people in that area root for you got Bruins fans, you got Islander fans, Ranger fans, Devil fans, but you're a Penguins fan. So I do want to hear about that.
Well, okay. So my family is originally from Western Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So I'm Pittsburgh on all fronts. Baseball season is a very sad time for me, but yeah, so I grew up, you know, like 91, 92, you know, in it, like on that side of Pennsylvania, like, oh, we're just winning championships back to back. You couldn't be anything else. And then when I moved to New York, I never switched over. I was like, oh no, I'm Penguins. Also, because the Penguins do, you know, from time to time win a championship, or the Pittsburgh does from time to time win a championship. And I don't really, I like sports, but I'm not like a maniac about sports like many of my friends who are all from New York. I don't know if that's related. but when my teams win, I get to really, you know, just really grind their nose into it.
Love it.
And again, if there's someone with the punches you hate, it's me. and then if my teams lose, I don't care. Oh, your boys got beat last night. Yeah, seems they did. You want to get lunch? I don't care.
There you go.
But yeah, I like sports. My family is very big Steelers fan. I got into hockey because like watching the 91 Stanley Cup. I just happened to be in a situation where it was just me and my dad that week, and so we were just watching it together, and so I was like sold. And it's a game where there's fighting, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's incredible.
In high school, all my friends were hockey players, so I learned how to play hockey. You know, like that was the deal.
Okay, so yeah. Like, but am I correct in my assumption that is a divided region? Like, so you had friends that probably rooted for every single one of those teams.
I have friends who are like diehard Rangers fans. I have friends who love the Islanders. I have a couple of like. One of my very best friends in the world she's a huge Bruins fan. But she also enjoys sports. She's a little more intense than I am about it, but she really enjoys the like rubbing your nose and shit when your team loses. So that's like the basis of our friendship. It's just a love of like hurting other people around sports. But yeah, so Hudson Valley's got a lot. I mean, and then you got like Buffalo's fan, you know, Buffalo fans. You got every, yeah. You know, because that area is just, and now it's even different. But when I lived there, especially, like, it's an area where like people moved because they were either coming out of the city or their families were going to work in the city. So there's just there's a lot of stuff happening in the Hudson Valley all the time.
Yeah, it that's like the last stop on like the Metro North, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I guess it would be a very long train ride, but I guess there are people that live in like the Poughkeepsie area that do commute to New York, for, like New York City for work, I guess.
Sure. And I lived, I grew up in Newburgh. So like I'm, you know, one stop closer at Beacon, but yeah. So I mean, a lot of people I knew growing up, like their families commuted to the city. And then when I got older, like a lot of my friends would live in Beacon, live in Newburgh, live in Poughkeepsie, whatever, and then take the train in.
Cool. So I do want to just like talk a little current events because, you know, just recently the Penguins were sold and Mario Lemieux made like a ridiculous amount of money. Like, I want to say it was like $300 million. I could be totally like selling it short, but it was a ridiculous amount of money that he made in that ownership. Like, so like the whole story was he had like a $23 million contract or something that the Penguins couldn't really afford. So they offered him part ownership in the team. And like now the Penguins are one of the most like profitable franchises in hockey and they just sold. So he like, he got a huge payday. So I guess when I say the name Mario Lemieux, like what does that like mean to you as a Western PA kid?
Again, like I cut, like my entire interest in hockey is watching him lead the team to championships. So he could do whatever he's not going to ever do anything that I'm going to be like, how could he? I'm like, oh, good on him. 300 yeah. million. That's mm-hmm. all he got. He deserves more. And
it could like, be more. I could totally be wrong in that number.
Oh yeah. And like, but I don't like who owns the team. I'm not particularly like, I thought it was so cool that he ended up as part owner of the team. Mm-hmm. For as long as he did, that for me was like, oh yeah, you know, like I don't know that this is the same because I don't care about the Yankees, but like, you know, people love, you know, there, people have a lot of feelings about Steinbrenner, and I would imagine that like if you were of that time where you felt positively about him, that maybe that's the same thing. But for, you know, like for me, just watching a player go from a player to a part owner is so cool, especially, you know, the guy that did it for that team. I, you mm-hmm. know, when I was younger, there wasn't, nobody really talked about the Penguins that I can remember until Lemieux got there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So seeing him like be willing to, you know, cause he could have, I'm sure he could have figured out some other way to not be an owner. You know what I mean? They would have paid him the money.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. He was owner of the team for 20 years, something like that. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. It's going on 20. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they made $300 million. I'd rather be somebody who was a player making an exceptional amount of money
exactly.
than some hedge fund dickhead or, you know, mm-hmm. whoever it's going to be. Yeah, so good on him.
Yeah, I agree.
And he really saved yeah. the franchise at the end of the day. Because
oh, of yeah. course he did, yeah.
They were in really tough times at the end of his career until they – obviously drafted Sidney Crosby and everything changed again, but mm-hmm. you know, who could have banked on that? Like it could have been a totally different story. Like he could have lost all $23 million and got nothing from that.
Yeah, absolutely. The only way this gets better is if he would have sold it to Sidney Crosby and then, Sidney Crosby, and then that just becomes like the thing, like Pittsburgh's just the team that like they sell it to their star player and then mm-hmm. he drafts the player that everyone fucking hates for the next 10 years.
Yep, there you go. I mean, like, but to be truthful, I mean, you really don't know, right? I mean, like, you know, Sid is what at this point, 34?
He's about our age, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, you know, Sid's probably got maybe another, you know, 4 or 5, you know, like good years in him.
Yeah.
Right. Let's say. But I mean, that very well could be. I mean, I don't know if they're going to get into like a weird situation where like it's going to be like, hey, we can't afford to pay you your salary. So here's some of the team. But I mean, I could very well see, I mean, Sid, you know, when he finally retires, you know, buying a stake in that team and being, you know, a part owner of that team. I mean, you know, as much vitriol as he gets from the rest of the, you know, NHL and the NHL fans, I mean, like the dude deserves it. And he really took the NHL out of a dark time and was one of the stars that helped the NHL get back on their feet. I mean, like nobody knew what was going to happen coming out of that lockout, man. Like nobody yeah. knew. I yeah. mean, there were people that were saying like, well, you know, the NHL is done, you know, yeah. and it's going to become like a regional thing. But, you know, here you had guys like Crosby and Ovi and, you know, all of these, you know, players become the new stars. It's like the new generation. It's like kind of like, talking about like almost wrestling in that way, right? Like, you know, Hogan passes the torch to, you know, like Bret Hart, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then the same deal is, you know, you've got you know, guys that were huge in that era, a guy like Lemieux essentially passing the torch to a guy like Crosby to lead the way. And I mean, thank God, you know, because like, who knows where we would have been without these kind of stars. But now, you know, we have the new generation of people, you know, so where, I don't know. I mean, let's, Bret Hart passed it to Austin. Austin passed it to blah, 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 to Cena, blah, blah, blah. And now we've got, you know, Kenny Omega, right? So, you know, Kenny Omega is kind of like, you know, our, you know, Connor McDavid's, right? And it's just like, there's always going to be these incredible, you know, people that you, when you get an opportunity to see them on the ice, it's like, you know, transformative. It's something else. But, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, guys like Crosby paving the way and Lemieux paving the way for Crosby and Gordy paving the way for Lemieux, it's just, you know, it's cool to just see it all, you know, kind of move. But so let, you know, let's talk a little bit of current Pens hockey, right? So, you know, they're probably in a situation where it's, you know, it's probably going to be rebuild time soon, right? You know, because you've got an aging Crosby, you've got an aging Malkin, you've got a lot of guys that are coming up to the end of their contracts, some big money contracts. And, you know, I wish I could say that as a hockey fan, like I know the ins and outs of the Penguins farm system, like I would the Islanders, but, you know, if you are kind of a little bit deeper in there, is a rebuild something that you're potentially excited for, or is it something that kind of puts that pit in your stomach? Like, I don't really know. It's, you know, is it palpable? Is it real? Do you think it can happen and get you guys back?
Yeah. I mean, like, we're what, fourth in our division right now.
Yep. Not doing too bad.
So, but as far as like a rebuild, you know, like, and let's be honest, it's when Crosby leaves, that's a big hole. And any rebuild, like I never think about a rebuild, like a rebuild season, it's like rebuild 5 years. Like it could take that. Especially with like, where our roster's at right now. So I'm excited, man. I like new players. I like new blood. I like where the league is headed. So I don't get nervous about it. You know, if Pittsburgh has a couple of years where they're just trash, okay, cool. We'll get back. It's Pittsburgh. Like as a, like, not to get super emotional about it, but like as a region, Pittsburgh is always constantly in this like rebuild and get torn back down, you know, just economically. So to when that happens with our teams, I never get too stressed out about it. You know, like, I'll go to Pirates game any day of the week. I still think it's still my favorite stadium to go to, you know what I mean? And the Penguins as a team and their farm system, I think they don't have the most money. And that's, you know, that's going to be what a lot of it comes down to.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, it'll just be what it's going to be. I'm not going to sweat it. You know, I don't get, like, when my team loses, I'm never the guy that's like, ah, they're trash, they're bums. Nah, like, they're athletes. They're just playing a game, man. I get on stage and I have a bad night. And so if I walked off and somebody was like, you're garbage.
Right? Imagine that. Yeah, you would. You sure would. Yeah.
And you can't really do that so much in the NHL anymore. So, you know, I don't want to be that guy.
No, that's true. It's true. It's, you know, I think that's something that the typical NHL fan kind of is guilty of. I know I'm guilty of it sometimes, you know, especially, you know, when you have such high hopes, like, you know, Mikey and I did with the Islanders season, you know, we anticipated that, you know, they were going to kind of, you know, flash the same thing we got the last 2 years, and they were going to be, you know, cup contenders, and here they are at the bottom of the division. But, you know, I mean, I find myself kind of doing the same thing. I, you know, I remember I'd said to Mikey the other day, you know, Bailey put one in the net after that fiasco where he didn't put it. Oh, hey, Pat. Hey. Dude, look at that. That's Pat, cool. Pat. I always forget that we can do that. And I'm pumped that definitely happened, but yeah. So, I mean, like that, it's tough, right? Because Bailey's put two in the net, and I'm just like thinking to myself, like, God, man, we're 30 games in and the guy's only scored two goals. Like, what the hell is his problem? But then I think to myself, like, if I put on a pair of skates and try to like touch ice. Like, I'm falling off like the face.
It would be like you in the Taco Bell line.
Yeah, it'd be like me in the Taco Bell drive-thru, just falling.
Falling all over yourself.
Constantly. So who the hell am I to be so critical of a hockey player who is far more athletic and knows far more about hockey than I do? Because, you know, I could sit here and be like, you know, shoot that puck. And he could be like, fuck you, man. You don't know shit. And it's like, yeah, I don't know shit. You're absolutely
right. Yeah, you're right.
But cool, man. So I just want to, you know, real quick, we've been going for almost about an hour, but I definitely, before we let you go, I want to definitely talk a bit more about what's kind of on the horizon for With the Punches. So, you know, obviously if there's anything that's kind of hush hush and you can't really talk about it much, that's totally fine. But, you know, I saw a little tweet that says, you know, there's some new shit coming. So
yeah,
I would love to hear about it.
So, third week of March, 2020, when we stopped touring, we just kind of stopped touring. We still had a group chat and we talked every week and after, I think, you know, some of the guys needed a little bit of time away from it, which is fine. Reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We got back to rehearsing and writing, which is just what we like to do. We just like to be in a room.
Sure.
Like, With the Punches ending was more just about like, yo, man, like, I can't eat off the dollar menu forever. And
absolutely.
Like, you know, we put out Keep It Going. I was 27. I was the age when everyone was quitting when we started the band.
Yep.
And the long end of quitting. So, I turned 40 this year. So I am, I should have put out to pasture a long time ago. But, you know, some of the other guys, they had more ambition for their life than sleeping on floors.
Sure.
I don't. But so we've just constantly been like sending demos back and forth. We've been to the studio a couple times in that time to work. But in March, third week of March 2020, we had decided that we were going to go in and we're going to make an EP. Awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. First week of March goes by and start hearing about people getting sick, but it doesn't really matter. It's not happening where we are. And second week, starting to hear more about it. And I'm driving to the studio. I'm driving to Shane's house. Before the studio, we're going to do a week of pre-production and then we're going to go into the studio for a week. And my wife calls me and says, hey, man, you're not going to be able to get home. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, they're shutting the country down. It's just, it's going to. And I was like, cool. Also, so we have five songs that we're like, we feel really strongly about. Awesome. But I'm always writing demos and sending them to guys. Shane calls me while I'm driving and says, hey, we don't want to do these two songs, we want to do these other two new ones that you just finished. And I was like, we haven't even talked about that. No, I'm I am a person who, like, I need to be prepared.
Sure.
And with the Punches, because as great as I think I truly am, the best thing about being in this band is the fact that, like, Shane is the greatest punk rock drummer that has ever lived. As far as I'm concerned, that Vinny is an unbelievable guitar player. Mike kills the bass, and that Jesse has ample time to really, like, write and feel what he's doing vocally.
Yep.
These are demos I made at 4 a.m. in my in my guest bedroom office and just sent to the guys because I was like, yo, these are cool. We will do these down the line.
Yep.
No, we want to do these this time. Yeah,
little did you know you were going to do it this time.
So we go in and I was like, well, we'll talk about it when I get there. We call the guy, our friend Brendan Williams, whose studio we recorded at. And he's like, all my jobs just canceled. Do you guys just want to come to the studio and we'll just start early? Okay. So we go in and unfortunately, because, you know, with COVID and stuff, and like Vinny has a kid, Mike has, I think at the time, just one kid. I think he's at three now. I don't really keep track. Yeah, it's a lot. A
lot of quarantine kids.
Yeah. His wife is very Irish Catholic. hi, Mara.
But yeah, so like everybody's very nervous and very uncomfortable about the thing. And so we're going in where we can. Everybody's like getting their stuff done. Jesse, Shane, and I are in pretty much the whole time. And we finished 5 songs. And I'm super excited about it. The record's called Discontent. It'll be out at some point this year. It's at the pressing plant, allegedly. Mike is handling it, but also he has 3 kids. And I'm never really sure. It's a plant that no one I've talked to about pressing records has ever heard of. Like, it could just be like, you know, like the Prince of Czechoslovakia needed to borrow some money.
Sure.
So he's going to start a pressing plant. Might be that. I don't know.
But, are you guys are doing it yourselves, or is someone helping you just distribute it or anything like that? Or
I don't know. I don't think I'm supposed to say, but fuck it. I don't care. Our buddy Nate, who runs a record label called Mutant League in Chicago.
Oh, love Mutant League. Hell yeah.
I don't know him. And again, like as I said before, we are very skeptical of people we don't know. So, but I know Kenny from Daggermouth and now Rest Easy. And so I called Kenny when Nate reached out, because, you know, I'm always on Twitter, just like Twitter fingers, just talking shit, running my mouth about things I probably shouldn't have, similar to what's happening now. And I was like, is this dude legit? And he goes, I would trust him with any record I do for the rest of my career. Good enough. I trust Kenny with, you know, with my children if I had any.
There you go.
So Mutant League is going to handle the digital side.
Okay.
We're going to do the physical stuff our own.
Okay.
Just cause I like having my fingers on stuff. I want to, when I see names I recognize, you know, people who are with the band in 2009 order the record, I want to put confetti in their package so that they open it and they hate me. I need it.
I love that.
So desperately. I found a box of Seams and Sticks records in my closet and found out that there were people that liked the record and didn't know that it had ever existed on vinyl. We pressed it twice. So I sold those, and I was just writing lyrics from the new record on the inside of the box because I have to do these things because it's the person that I am.
I love it.
But yeah, so we're really excited for Mutant League. And,
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, Mutant League. Mutant League has done a couple Chief of State. Chief State, Belmont, a couple of cool things, and I think they did a couple of Lucky Boys records, like far after the fact. If anyone out there is a Lucky Boys Confusion fan, but I love that, and I'm really really excited for, you know, for the record to come out when it comes out. I mean, we all know the way it's working with pressing plants right now, man. It's a tough time. I'm still waiting on my new Great Big Pile of Leaves record, which is maybe never gonna get to me ever. And I bought it in like June, but this is the way things are. I get it. Adele had to press like 100,000 records. She had to do it and set 500,000. Yeah, 500,000. Absurd. But you know what? I saw the Adele record in Walmart actually today, and I was like, well, good. There's 14 copies of these that no one's gonna buy. And if they do buy it, they're gonna put them on their like weird Crosley record players and just rip them to shit. So
that's the thing, they'll need multiple copies.
Yeah,
she
exactly
knew what she was doing. She's like, it comes with a free Crosley.
Perfect. So I will leave you with this one thing. So usually when I'm when we're doing interviews, I'm usually like clicking around a little bit just to find like little tidbits of interesting information, and I found one, and it's actually kind of fun. So I'm clicking around Discogs because that's where I always am, because I'm always buying records because I'm a shill. And so I'm looking around, and I see there's one copy of It's Not the End of the World just hanging out on Discogs for the very very reasonable price of $240, and it's someone in the Czech Republic has it, and very rare is what he put, so at least he knows how rare it is. But I always love that, just because it's like, you never really like realize like how, you, like as a musician, like, you know, you like you go to a show and you're playing and you see that your band is you know, this level of you know, like people liking you, right? Like you get to see it, you get to feel it. It's awesome. but you never really know exactly what your band is worth until you see one weird copy of your record just sitting there on Discogs for like $300. And well, there it is. So
what was that movie, like Waiting for Sugar Man or something like that, where he was like
searching for Sugar Man?
Yeah, dude. Oh, okay. You got to see that movie, Tom. So he's like a South African, like acoustic folk music guy.
Okay.
Who like pretty much did, or no, he was in, so this is it. He was in the United States.
Okay.
His record did like nothing, like flopped. But for some reason in South Africa, he's like the Beatles. And like he had no idea about it.
That's so, like, so funny.
20, 30 years go by or whatever, and he goes to South Africa and plays for like in arenas. It is wild. So maybe that's going to happen to you, Dustin, in the Czech Republic. You're just going to.
Brother, that's what we've been hoping this whole, because we knew it wasn't happening in the States. So we're like, maybe in some far
very
off
rare
corner of the world.
And then who rare. Knows, man? You go to Czech Republic, you play for thousands of adoring fans, and you know, someone in the Jager family just comes up to you and is like, you're a Pens fan, right? And you're like, oh shit, it's happening. It's happening.
My cousin Nicole is a lawyer for the Penguins.
Ooh, okay. This is awesome.
And so besides being infinitely more successful in life than I will ever be, she's like, oh yeah, if you ever want tickets. And I'm like, I always want tickets. She's like, yeah. Anytime you're going to be in town, just let me know. And I was like, cool. Yeah. Like, so I like, we played a festival and we were like, we've been playing shows in Pittsburgh, but it was never like during hockey season. I'm just like, just please, please just. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I have two sisters. My older sister likes to make the joke that, music is such a right place, right time kind of thing. And the right place is at the With the Punches show. And the right time is about 45 minutes before With the Punches goes on. That band is going to do really well. stay champs, neck deep, real friends. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, no, it's like, I couldn't be more grateful or happy with the way that our band, the fact that we haven't put out a song since 2012. And I still every day get messages like, oh man, like, this song means so much to me. I have this lyric tattooed on me. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What? And yep. And like, you think about like, and not to like bring it back to hockey, but if you think about like, hockey is the most punk rock sport. It's, you're the closest to the people, right? Football, mm-hmm. You're super far away. Baseball, you're far away.
Yep.
Hockey, you're right up against the board. You get to absolutely. See them. You get to interact with those people. And mm-hmm. And so, you know, probably, you know, besides, SSD Control, which is like the first band that I remember being like a hockey a hardcore band. Mm-hmm. Like it just makes sense that like so many of the people in our scene gravitate towards that sport.
Agreed. And that's the reason why we're so fortunate to do this podcast, right? You know, one day Mikey realized that there's this real deep parallel between these two things. And
Tom now, didn't believe in me.
I didn't. I really didn't. I was like, no way. I mean, like, yeah, cool. The dude from Bayside likes hockey. Like, that's great. You know, like, what else do we got? And then I think that the tide for me was when he pulled Nuno from Wilhelm. And I was like, shit, okay, I gotta get on board. So I did 120 episodes later. But I guess the real quick thing that, you know, I'll leave you with is, you know, we had an opportunity to chat with the dudes in I Call Fives, and like, they kind of
sad for you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. but like, that much like with the Punches, they put out their record in 2012, and now all of a sudden they're coming back and they're making music. But one of the things that they said, you know, in the interview that he was worried about was like, are people going to give a shit about I Call Fives in 2022, right? And he was fortunate enough to realize that, yeah, people do. And not only for the nostalgia, it's not really a nostalgia thing as much as it's just like, people connected with I Call Fives back then, and 10 years later, they want to connect again. And I think the same is true with the Punches. You know, people want to connect with you again, because when they were connecting with you, and I'm just using my age as a benchmark, but when sure. they were connecting with you at 25, now 10 years later, they've been through 10 years of breakups and 10 years of work and 10 years of children and you know, everyone's been through a year and a half or 2 years of a fucking pandemic, and the opportunity to get to connect with you guys again is like incredible. And I think that a lot of bands are kind of coming to realize that like, you know, we can connect with people on a whole other level, even with us being older, right? Because like, you know, now maybe if in your 20s you were writing songs about girls and, you know, sneakers and I don't know, whatever the fuck you're writing about. Now you're writing about, you know, your taxes are too high and like, you know, all this stuff. But like, does it align with what me as a mid-30s person is like thinking about and worrying about? Fuck yeah. So I love it. And I wish you guys all of the best in the world and all of the success with the new music that's coming out. I think it's awesome, man. And I'm really stoked. And but even more than that, I'm really stoked that, you know, you have an opportunity to, you know, to be with one of your best friends in JJR and play with Keep Flying, man. I think that's such a cool thing too. I think that they're, again, one of those bands who we've said it ad nauseum. I hate to use the term so many times, but I mean, like, they are just an unbelievable force in this kind of music. So the fact that you're with them now and playing with them and writing with them is an awesome thing. So I'm super stoked for you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. I hope, you know, someone buys that record from the Czech Republic. I really do.
Please don't spend $250 on a With the Punches record. I'll just repress it. It's fine.
See, there it is. And that's it. And that's the fun of it. But awesome. So we're definitely going to get you back on, you know, as we get closer to With the Punches putting out their, you know, your new music and stuff. And I'm sure even if it's 6 months or whenever the hell it is, you're going to have some fantastic stories about more flamethrowers and palm trees being alighted. But I'm into it, man. I really appreciate you hanging with us. Mikey, do you have anything?
No, Dustin, thank you so much. I hope you make it back to North Carolina. Please. I could give you the insider tip. It was a very sunny day today, so a lot of the snow and ice did start to melt. So hopefully that means some smooth traveling tomorrow.
Let's hope so. It'd be nice to go home. I haven't been home since, like, I hate to make the joke, but like since last year. But like that was a while ago now, and I want to go back to my house. You know what I mean? Like, I'm ready to go home.
As you should, man. But again, thank you so much for taking the time to be on here with us. Really stoked for you, and we're gonna see you soon. So
absolutely.
All right.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, guys.